you've caught us again. It's the Slackerwood Podcast. I'm Chris Holland.
I'm Jack Kernian.
And this week we're going to talk about some news going on in Austin and the upcoming Austin Gay and Lesbian International Film Festival.
Yes, and let me bring up some interesting news that I've got since the last time. I just got email about the Austin Film Society premiere of Surfer Dude.
Surfer Dude.
Surfer Dude. This is a film starring Matthew McConaughey. Are you surprised? No. Surfer Dude?
all right.
It will be
that was my really bad McConaughey impression.
It's directed by the guy. Oh, I didn't write down his name. I feel so guilty. The director of the Hands on the Hard Body documentary.
Okay.
His name is eluding me. I'm so sorry.
Google it. Surfer Dude.
Yes. It will be premiering on Wednesday, September 3rd at the Paramount. You can get tickets through the Paramount. There is I will be there because there's a red carpet beforehand, only they are calling it a green carpet, which isn't really a surfer color either. I don't understand that.
Green carpet?
And,
that's kind of gross, actually.
Depends on what color green. Matthew McConaughey will be there. The director will be there. And the other cast members, I noticed Willie Nelson is in the cast.
Really?
And so this is where I'm like, ooh, maybe Willie Nelson will be there.
You think Willie Nelson's ever been surfing?
I have no idea. Maybe this may be a reason to see this movie right here.
Okay, I'm going to digress really quickly. Have you seen Tropic Thunder yet?
No.
McConaughey is pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Really?
I mean, everybody in the movie is really over the top. I think Tom Cruise gets most of the attention, but McConaughey has a part as Ben Stiller's agent, which is just priceless. And that's the most recent movie I've seen, so...
Well, the most recent movie I've seen, oh, I saw The Long Shots this afternoon. This doesn't count. But I've also seen Hamlet 2, which should be playing in Austin theaters by the time this podcast goes live and is very funny.
Talk about The Long Shots for a second, because that was
an
Austin Film Festival kind of preview screening.
It was an Austin Film Festival preview screening. There was also members of the women's professional Austin football team there. I had no idea we had one.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They really seem to enjoy the film. It's about a junior high age girl who gets on a Pop Warner football team as a quarterback.
So it's like it's a comedy. It's fictional.
It's one of those heartwarming family. You can do it if you try. Our town has lots of heart kind of films. Yeah. It's cute. If you have kids, the kids all really enjoyed it.
Was it part of their Target Family series?
It's part of their Target Family series. They're going to have more of those during the festival.
They've been really beefing up their year-round programming.
I mean, I have noticed that. I get email all the time.
Like $50 is the cost of a membership to that thing, and then you get to watch all these movies.
Yeah,
so. Not to plug them too much. Love those guys, but anyway, what else is going on?
A couple other things I wanted to mention. The Austin Film Society's next series is starting September 9th. Not too early to mention that now, and they just sent me a really lovely poster in the mail for it. It's called The Third Wave, Contemporary German Cinema, and there's a whole variety of films from new German directors and contemporary films from directors who've been around for a while.
I got an email from them recently. I think The Chronicle's doing its best of voting again.
Yes.
I noticed they didn't have a best film festival, but they did have a best film series.
Well, I think we should all write that in. And of course, somebody who may be in the room with us will be asking us to write in Eglis.
Yeah, like I said,
I don't know which one I would pick. That's why.
They didn't do Best Film Festival, which I thought was odd, but they definitely did Best Film Series. So interesting. I guess that's Chronicle.com, Austin Chronicle. Google it. You know
what it is. If you're living in Austin, you know how to get to the Austin Chronicle website, I would assume.
So is that what you're looking forward to seeing this coming week, or?
I may go to the Surfer Dude.
The Surfer Dude thing, that would be pretty cool.
There's also the Paramount's also continue still doing its summer film series through the middle of September. Lots of good stuff coming up there.
Yeah. I noticed the Arbor is doing more sort of cult, midnight movie type stuff.
They're doing a Wednesday night at the movies. I just saw the thing before I got here on their wall. I'm trying to remember what is coming up. I don't think that's on the web.
No. Well, I think the Austin Movie Blog might have done a list of the films. I know Joe vs. the Volcano was this last week, so I was really sorry I missed that. But
coming up in a couple of weeks is Dead Alive.
Okay, there you go.
I would, Don't eat before you see it, otherwise it's really good. The last thing I wanted to mention is that a documentary shot in Austin is now on DVD. It's called Inside the Circle, and it's about the world of the B-boy, which is breakdancing. As you know, back in my day, we called it breakdancing, but it's all B-dancing now.
Because breakdancing sounds too dated.
I guess breakdancing sounds too, yeah.
B-dancing is much better.
B-dancing.
Much cooler.
It was directed by Marcy Garriott. It premiered at South by Southwest in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it very much.
Do they call them pee pants? They're not parachute pants anymore, they're pee pants?
No. No, and they wear much cooler clothes than that.
And you don't do the worm on cardboard, you do it on seaboard.
Oh, dear.
Oh, come on, I can go all day with this.
We got 20 minutes. Of course, then we should be using words like seaboard and the P-mount and
there we go,
the AMO. We should be abbreviating everything so we can get everything in. So.
Well, let's turn our attention to the main topic then, because I don't have a segue. Egglift is already truncated as much as it can be.
It's its own thing.
That's right. Yeah. So we have with us Lisa Kaselak, and I hope I pronounced that right.
Kind of depends on what generation of my family you talk to. It's Kaselak, actually.
Kaselak, really?
Kaselak, if you talk to my great-grandmother.
That's why I wanted you to introduce her, because I wasn't sure, and I assumed you would know.
And yet this is why you should do your research before you start.
That's okay. Yes. I plan to butcher the names of several of our directors, so that should awesome. Make us about even.
And you can feel free to butcher my last name
awesome.
If you want to.
Okay.
Cool.
So I was looking at the program, and there's all kinds of exciting stuff going on, and the biggest change this year is that it's been at the Arbor for a long time, and this year it's at Alamo Ritz downtown. What inspired you guys to change the venue this year?
Well, a lot of things. You know, when the festival transitioned from when Scott Dinger left the festival and decided, you know, after doing it for, I don't know, 15 years or something, decided to move on, they moved the festival to the Arbor because they could really no longer do it at the Dobie. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks just, they adjusted to it being at the Arbor, but really preferred that the festival be downtown because everything else is downtown.
So many of the parties are downtown.
Parties are downtown. When people come to visit Austin, they want to be in the downtown area. You know, they don't have transportation visiting filmmakers and directors, so they want to be able to walk from point A to point B to point C and from their hotel. The Arbor is a great theater, and we've had a really wonderful relationship with them for the years that we've been there. And I can only speak to this last year and, you know, what I've heard the board say, but we've enjoyed the run there and may go back there still. But our members wanted the festival back downtown, so we've been trying to find a way to bring it back downtown, and this was the first year we've financially been able to do that. So,
Great. Another thing is that the time of the year is changing slightly. It's always been the end of September.
Well, not always.
Not
as we
always.
Said last
That's true.
Last
we
episode,
had Adobe, we had Adobe schedule last time from 1991. it was very different then. But in recent years, because I always it backed up against Fantastic Fest and was also pretty close to Austin Film Festival. Now this year it's September 3rd through 7th.
Yeah. We don't want to be competing with other film festivals. You know, yourself being a blogger that it's nearly impossible to go from fest to fest to fest, and you have to start making really difficult choices.
Yes.
And a lot of our audience, you know, they go to the Austin Film Festival. I want to go to the Austin
Sure.
Film Festival, and sometimes I'm so burned out from Eagle that I'm, you know, I don't even know if I can stand watching another week of movies. So it's just better for everybody. It's the end of the summer. Things really haven't geared up yet for fall. It's right after Labor Day. It's not competing with anything else. So it seemed like a good move. We'll see. This is the first year we're trying it out, so we'll see.
Good. The other thing I noticed that looks different this year is that there is more of an emphasis on you have a badge and pass system that seemed to, in other years when I've been there, everybody's buying tickets to individual movies. So it's a little different this year.
Yeah. You should probably tell me how you feel about that. I'm interested to know, as somebody who's been going to the festival for a long time, how you think that will change, you know, the way people behave at the festival.
I don't know. People seem to pick. I didn't always see the same people at the same movies, so I don't know whether they just bought a lot of tickets or people only bought a few tickets. I don't know enough about the pattern.
Right.
I like when I go to festivals, I like having a badge or a pass because then I can change, you know, I don't like picking my movies 2 weeks in advance and not being able to change them or running the risk of them being sold out.
Right. Well, primarily the reason that we went to the badge and pass system is because, well, for a number of reasons. One, it's administratively a whole heck of a lot easier on our volunteer staff. It's just very difficult to administrate selling individual tickets to films, yeah, especially ahead of time. The second reason would be the reason that you mentioned, which is that it's easier on people. They can be more flexible. They can just have this one pass. They don't have to go and get will call tickets for every film that they're going to go and see. And especially if you have a badge, you can kind of sail in at the last minute. You don't have to wait in line.
Yeah.
Also, frankly, if you're going to marathon the film festival, you're getting a hell of a deal. I mean, it's a significant discount to buy a film pass and go to see a whole lot of movies than it is to buy individual tickets. And ultimately, while we'd like to make money off of our festival, we also want to encourage people to come and see the films. And the more films that they can see, the more they'll enjoy the festival and experience the whole festival and not just a single film here or there.
Well, you are the programming director. Is that the full title?
That's what they tell me.
Programming director.
Yeah. I don't know if it's program director or programming director. I've heard it both ways. Okay. I say programming. That sounds good to me.
I should see what it says in this program and then we would know.
Why don't you give us maybe some highlights of stuff that kind of has you excited? I know you're going to say the whole program has me excited, but give us the opening night, the centerpiece.
Okay. I actually am really, really excited about the programming this year.
That's your job, of course.
Yeah. Well, no, last year I came in so late that it was just this mad scramble to bring everything together. And I've had a year since then to do research and to really look at what's playing around and to get my hands dirty in this particular genre, in this niche. That I didn't have the opportunity to do last year. So I've had a chance to build excitement for myself. And the reason that I chose the films for the centerpiece, the opening and the closing night and the spotlight films is because they're just exceptional films. And I would say across the board that what defines our festival this year is award-winning films. Our opening night film, The Edge of Heaven, won Best Screenplay at Cannes. It was the first Lux Prize winner for the European Cinema, which is awarded by the European Parliament. The centerpiece film was Best New Director at the Korean Film Awards, the Best Actor at the Korean Film Awards. XXY won the Spanish Goya and, you know, was selected as its Oscar contender. These are pretty prestigious awards. This isn't just, you know, any new film festival award. These are some of the top awards that you can get for a film in any genre. That's pretty exciting to me.
That is exciting. Can you tell us a little more about some of the like opening, closing, centerpiece, some of the bigger films in the festival that I know people will be interested in? Well,
yeah.
I know people will be interested in everything. I went through this whole program.
I hope
going,
so.
Ooh, ooh, but, you know, some of the bigger films in the festival.
Well, I mentioned The Edge of Heaven as the best screenplay, winning the best screenplay award at Cannes. Fadi Akin is the director of that film, and he's a really, really interesting upcoming new filmmaker. He's in his early 30s. He has won really prestigious awards for pretty much every film that he's put out since 1995, since he graduated from film school. I think even his first film school film won the Golden Bear Award at the Berlinale, at Berlin Film Festival, excuse me. And The Edge of Heaven deals with a lot of the same themes that Fadi Akin deals with in his films, which is about the tensions between Turkish immigrants and German citizens. And this is a similar theme to, you know, Mexican immigrants living in America. His family, his parents emigrated to Germany in the 1960s, and so it's something that he processes as an artist. And he definitely puts it into a political context, so it's not just personal. He also develops really complex characters that aren't just two-dimensional. This isn't just a political issue that he's dealing with, it's just the backdrop that forms the stories and the struggles that the characters have to go through. And largely, a lot of it is about this sort of common theme of how do you bridge the divide if you're the first generation child of an immigrant parent, because the cultural differences are vast. You're growing up, he's growing up in a German culture, and his parents came from a Turkish culture. And that can cause a lot of conflict. And he's wanting to embrace more of his Turkish heritage and more of his cultural heritage. And these are the themes that are sprinkled commonly through a lot of his films. So
Looking forward to that. The Centerpiece film hasn't been seen very much at all in the U.S. This is Like a Virgin.
Like a Virgin. I really want to call it a premiere, but I'm technically not allowed to because it played at the New York Korean Film Festival. But I would say that it's a GLBTI premiere. I haven't seen it at any other GLBTI film festivals in the U.S., although Vancouver's playing it. I think their film festival is either next week or the week after, very soon. And I did not find this film. Tim League found this film. It's a really wonderful story about a high school boy who comes from this very dysfunctional family, and he's obsessed with Madonna. And he really wants a sex change operation, so he joins this Korean Caesareum wrestling team, which is a special form of wrestling, to win the $5,000 purse so he can have a sex change operation. And, you know, you really want to root for this character. He did win Best Actor at the Korean Film Awards. He did a wonderful job with the character. But even all of the supporting cast members do a great job of creating a film that's not just sort of this goofy comedy about a goofy kid who's gay, which is a departure in Asian cinema and the way that Asian cinema treats gay characters.
This has a little more depth.
Has a lot more depth.
Great. And that's, when is that playing? We're saying Centerpiece, but I don't know what date that is.
September the 5th.
Friday the 5th.
And actually, I just might want to make a note about this. Our program guide has a bit of a misprint. It actually says that the Centerpiece film is on Saturday. It's listed in the right place, but it's the wrong date.
Oh.
Yeah. It's correct on B-side. And it's correct in the pullout, but it's not listed correctly under its description. So just a note to everybody, Friday, September 5th is the Centerpiece film. Don't miss it because that'll sell out.
So compared to the website's going to be correct.
Correct. Yes. That's right.
And the closing night film, which looks like a lot of fun, and that is called Were the World Mine.
And you're a Hamlet fan.
Well, I like anytime people mess with Shakespeare, I love that.
Uh-huh.
So, and this one is A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is a play I really like. So.
Yeah. Well, the fun thing about this film is the production values are just off the charts. I mean, Tom Gustafson is the director, and they really just spared no expense in the production values. But it's the lead character plays this. He's an outed character, but he kind of takes a lot of flack for being gay, and he plays on the school's rugby team, and you know, it's pretty much everyone around him is sort of very traditionally like heterosexually masculine. You know, he's not really allowed to be his gay self, and he gets cast by the drama teacher as Puck in the school's upcoming play of Midsummer Night's Dream, and he's having a lot of trouble interpreting the script and coming up with dialogue that feels right to him. So she encourages him to sort of find his own way of speaking about it. And in the process, he discovers essentially a recipe for turning other people gay. Which he then unleashes on the entire rugby team. So it's a, you know, it's like the gay fantasy that everybody wanted to have in high school. And, you know, it's musicals and wonderful costumes. It was a great way to close out the festival.
Oh, that was a perfect way to close the festival. And then you get to go party.
Yeah.
So.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the challenges of programming GLTB? First start off with GLTBI, because that's a new one on me. GLBT, I think I've always had, but the I's new. And then, you know, talk about the kind of films that you see and what informs your decision about what ultimately gets programmed.
Okay. I have to think about that question all the time. So first of all, the I stands for intersex, which is, I mean, really the gay community is knitted together by civil rights issues and political issues. But they're a community that doesn't have a tremendous amount more than that in common. They're very different niches that comprise the gay community. But the other thing that really brings everyone together is the sexual minority, you know, that it's something other than heterosexual. And so intersex is when you aren't defined as a male or a female, and you don't chromosomally and also physiologically, which is not the same as being transgendered. So it's a new definition and it has to be included. So most of the film festivals around the United States are now GLBTI as opposed to just GLBT. But I'm just learning about all of this because this is a very new sphere for me. I came on board as a programming director last year, and I'm heterosexual, but I don't think about it that way so much. I think about it as a niche film festival that has some special needs and requirements. So if I were to become the programming director, for example, of a sci-fi film festival or of a horror film festival like Fantastic Fest, I just, you know, you would have to learn about that niche. You would have to learn about the issues that are important to the people in that niche. You'd have to learn what films are out there in that niche. You have to know where to go and get them. And that's not really that different. What I think about first and foremost is the film good? And then I look at, in the group of films that are good that we've chosen, then I look at, all right, is this group of films catering to the broad spectrum of audience that we need to be catering to? And does it speak to all of the people that we need to be speaking to? But first and foremost, is this a good film? And I think that's my you know, film school background speaking there.
Talk a little bit about gay filmmaking in Austin. Are people making gay films in Austin?
Sure.
I assume so.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a number of local filmmakers in the festival this year. And this also references sort of the process by which we choose films. We don't particularly look at including or not including local filmmakers. Again, all of our films go through the same process, which is that they must be screened by a minimum of two programmers. And if there's any ambiguity, then we kick it to a third programmer, including myself. So I don't make these decisions in a vacuum at all. We have a very large programming committee, and it's about as objective a process as you can possibly get. The local filmmakers that we have are PJ Raval and Jay Hodges, who did Trinidad, the documentary feature, AJ Clearway, who did Clouded, it's just a short film, Keith Wilson did a film called When the Light's Red, I Am Not a Werewolf, which is by J. Anthony Hernandez, and he was actually a My Gay Movie competition entrant, which we didn't get enough submissions for, so we decided to hold the competition again later in the year and advertise for it, but we did include all of the submissions as possibilities for the film festival, and he made it in, which is awesome.
That is cool.
And Jen Garrison, who used to be the... completely randomly used to be the board president for AGLIF, and she has since moved to Los Angeles, but her film Greg, the documentary, is in the festival as well.
Oh, cool.
Talk a little bit about Trinidad that played L.A., and I mean, PJ is something of a, I won't say celebrity, but he's a local, he's pretty well known, but I thought, is Trinidad his directorial debut?
I think it's his featured
debut. Okay.
There may be some shorts.
But you know, that's a pretty interesting film, and has, I don't know, why don't you talk about what it's about, and I'll see if I can crystallize what I think about it.
It's about a town in Colorado, Trinidad, Colorado, which is the sex change capital of the world. And Colorado, as you know, is a fairly conservative state. So the documentary explores what this facility, the sex change facility, establishing itself in Trinidad, Colorado, has done to the local population. But I think the really nice message in the film, and I don't think that they intended to have a message, but if there was one, it's that, you know, we really can all get along, that when you put two really disparate and seemingly at odds groups of people together, and you can see that they're all human beings, that there's nothing like completely freakish about them, that they bond at that common element of that we're all humans, that we all want the same things. We all just want to be happy. We all, you know, just want to be accepted. We all just want to be able to live our lives. And it shows the struggles that people who are born a man but want to identify as a woman or vice versa go through in just being able to actually actualize that desire.
I think what impressed me about it was just how well the storytelling was handled. I mean, there are a lot of things about sex change that, you know, people are interested in either for prurient reasons or just simple, you know, it's alien to me, therefore it's fascinating or whatever. And handling that, you know, when do you show the actual physical results of the operation? when do you show these people as not necessarily perfect, loving human beings, even in their own community? It's just really, really nice storytelling. So I'm really happy to see it included on the program.
Yeah, I am too. I think it's a great film. You know, again, PJ went through the same process everybody else went through when we when we programmed Trinidad, and we were delighted that it was a good film and that we're able to include it. Yeah. And you can hear PJ talk about it, the film himself, on Arts Eclectic on Tuesday at 4:30. We'll be interviewing, talking about Trinidad there.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to hurry up and edit this together and get it out there before Tuesday at 4:30.
We'll find out if it's rebroadcasting, and it may be on the web too.
It might be. Mm.
Well, Lisa, I have to say I'm really looking forward to this year's festival. That's AGLIF, the Austin Gay and Lesbian International Film Festival, on September 3rd through September 7th at the Alamo Ritz. I'm looking forward to having an espresso milkshake while I watch some of these films.
Right.
And various party venues. One of the AGLIF seems to just have more parties. And you have this wonderful film lineup, and then you just go to these fabulous parties.
They're going to be fabulous. Yeah. Our opening night, our launch party, Kelly Gray is going to be performing at Club DeVille. And our centerpiece party is a band called Pocketful of Dang, which they're a wonderful new local band. And DJ Tweety will be spinning there. And actually, at our closing night party, which is at the Jones Center, the comedian Vicky Shaw, whose film Hot Flash Texas Barbecue is playing in the festival, she'll be addressing the audience there. So,
great.
Cool.
Great.
How much are passes going for?
The passes are $75.
Okay.
Which, again, is just a tremendous value, especially if you're a film festival marathon. So you can get them online at aglif.org.
Cool.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I think that wraps it up for another episode.
Yeah.
Of Slackerwood, the podcast.
Tune in next time when we'll have more exciting film stuff. Fantastic Fest will be right around the corner then, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, we should get Lars or Tim in here. Somebody.
Somebody good.
Actually, no, let's get Zach. Zach's way more entertaining than those guys. All right. I'm Chris Holland.
And I'm Jack Kernian.
And we'll see you next time.